Therefore, Bodhisattva just cannot come because you are not ready. So one needs to be patient, even in searching. With proper patience, then one can eventually develop diligence. With diligence, then the spiritual achievement will come. The next paramita is diligence. Paramita of diligence means making progress in a daily basis. Confucius said basically the same thing. Every day one should make progress. But some people criticize Confucianism and Buddhism are pretty backward. Apparently they did not know the teaching or the philosophy of Confucianism and Buddhism. But those two are really dealing with diligent cultivation. They request daily progress. Diligence in Chinese consists of two words. The first word means pure and not mixed. The second word means progress and not backward. For today's scientific achievement made by the scientists, it is also due to their hard working and daily diligence. Without that, the scientific creation of invention cannot be happened. Buddha Dharma are likewise, and in practice Buddha Dharma, one need to pick up one method only, and diligent in pursuing this method, until one reach enlightenment. When the mind is enlightened, then one can move on to study other methods or schools' teachings, and will be well versed in other methods quickly, because when one is completely, thoroughly realized, then all Dharma can be fully realized. If one do not follow the prior diligence and practice many methods at the same time, then one will not achieve spiritual achievement. I'd like to tell you a story, a true story. In the 1900s in China, a famous teacher called Venerable Di Xuan, he has a disciple, monk, who left home to become a monk at middle age, 40, 50, some in that time, that age. He was an old friend of Venerable Di Xuan in the countryside. But Di Xuan is a person with good knowledge and many experience about life. And this person was born in a poor family, do not have knowledge and experiences. And his job is to fix something that we don't even know today. It is to fix the broken pieces of bowls and plates. But in today's time, if bowls and plates are broken, we simply throw away. You see, in the early time in China, people are very frugal. They don't throw away. They fix that one. And this person, without proper knowledge and experience, is doing fixing for a living. And he's been doing that for many, many years. He truly realized life is full of sufferings. So he came to his old friend, who is the famous Venerable Di Xuan, tried to request to become a monk, but it was rejected. And he still insists because of the good relationship from childhood. But the teacher says, you are so old and physically weak. If you want to practice the Dharma teachings or the morning ceremony, the five major ceremonies in a daily basis, you cannot do. And people will laugh about you. To practice something like teaching the Dharma to others, you don't even recognize the word. You are illiterate. But this person refused to leave the teacher, insists to become a monk. Because of their old friendship, the teacher's family said, okay, but there's one condition. After I shave you, you do not stay in the temple, you do not take precepts, I will find a small temple in the remote countryside, you stay there by yourself, and I will have friends, Buddhist friends, take care of you. They're going to offer rice, material food for you, and there will be an old lady cook for you. And I teach you only one method, that is Namo Amitabha. And you just do that, nothing else. And if you are tired chanting, take a rest. When you feel good, continue your chanting. That's all I want you to do. And this monk, this old friend says, okay. So he had hair got shaved. He just followed instruction and stayed in the countryside by himself in a place. It's very poor and lousy place, but he just followed the instruction and practiced very diligently. 3 years later, one day, he left that place and went to town and visited a friend, relatives actually. Then he told the old lady, do not cook for me tomorrow. I don't need food. This old lady thought he must met some friend. They're going to invite him for lunch. Then second day, the old lady came to visit the monk. Because the temple that the old monk lived is so poor, you can see through, there's probably no window or gate, door. He saw the teacher monk. The monk was standing facing the window and holding the chanting beads in hand. The old lady called the monk without any response. And the lady came closer and find he was already passed away in chanting Amitabha's name. So out of shock, the lady quickly go to the village and ask other people to check, and they all realized this monk truly passed away. Then they quickly sent somebody else to tell the master Dishen. And in the early time of China, the traffic is not so convenient. It takes 3 days to come back to have the teacher to see this old monk who just passed away. And he still stood there for 3 days. And once the venerable saw this old friend who practiced only Amitabha for only 3 years, he gave him the greatest compliment. Those Dhamma master who can spread Buddha Dhamma, teaching so famous, and touch so many people's hearts, are not comparable to your achievement. And why he has this achievement? He is very pure in his practice and with great diligence. So look from people today practicing Buddha Dhamma. Since people are working pretty hard, but diligent with confusion, diligent with scattered mind, for 30 years with this kind of diligence of today's people, there are going to be no achievement. I've been listening to this tape about this true story over and over again, and I feel very touched. Actually, if you are pure, you know this method of Amitabha is so profound, there will be no need to change any sutra, any other mantra. Just stick firm to one word, that is Namo Amitabha. So the principle of diligence can be applied to Zen meditation, mantra chanting, Buddha name chanting, and some people like to study sutra and teach other people sutra. That can also be utilized with the principle of diligence. If a person all his lifetime or her lifetime only spread and teach one sutra, for example, we teach only Amitabha Sutra for 10 years, again and again, then every time he teaches Amitabha Sutra, every time he has making progress, and 10 years later, he becomes Amitabha. If a person teaches other sentient beings, other being persons of Universal Door Chapter of the Wonderful Lotus Flower Sutra for 10 years, and 10 years later, with constant diligence and concentration in one sutra, he or she become Guanyin Bodhisattva or Avalokiteshvara. But if a person tried to become a great Dhamma master and teach 10 different types of sutras for 10 years, then he become nothing. He will not become the expert. I remember 20, 30 years ago, Venerable Xingyun, literally means galaxy, the great galaxy master, pretty famous in southern part of Taiwan and now all over the Taiwan. He had about 100 students, all monks. And I encouraged him to tell his students, one student should concentrate on one sutra during their study period of time in the temple. And then 10 years later, the Buddha light was shining to all Taiwan, because you're going to have 100 experts teaching 100 different sutras. And even they don't reach that level, we say 50% people quit, do not reach the level that we anticipated. Then you're still going to have 50 experts teaching 50 sutras. And then people who ever in other places need to listen to Amitabha Sutra, you will send Amitabha student who is the expert in Amitabha Sutra. People who want to listen to Kristigaba Sutra, you send the Kristigaba monk, because he is an expert in Kristigaba Sutra. Unfortunately, he did not listen to my recommendation. He said, then this place no longer like a Buddhist institute. A Buddhist institute must, the student must be knowledgeable in all teachings. So he did not accept my recommendation. But if a person truly understands the importance and the value of diligence, in the case of a spreading Buddha Dharma, and he concentrates or she concentrates only one sutra, then the achievement is bound to occur. For example, Bodhisattvas are also experts. They have enlightened already, and they know all other teachings and sutras and many other methods. But to be an example, a good example of sentient beings, they still teach sentient beings only one method that they know. Actually, they can teach many others, but they want to show you a good example of concentration and diligence. So that tells us how important diligence can be. Without it, spiritual achievement will not occur. The fifth item of paramita is samadhi paramita. Literally in Chinese, it's Zen samadhi. And this Zen samadhi can be categorized as worldly samadhi and transworldly samadhi, or beyond the world samadhi. That's basically the Dhamma samadhi. The worldly samadhi covers four Zen stages or eight samadhi level. And the result of this practice can make a person be born into the realm of form, which is high heaven, heavenly level, or the realm of formlessness, that's even higher level of heaven. The next category of Zen samadhi is trans-world samadhi, that goes beyond the world of life and death. And that can be further categorized three types. The Theravada type, the Mahayana type, and lastly, the supreme, utmost samadhi. The first type, Theravada style samadhi, are practiced by those beings seeking for Arahant. And the next level, Mahayana samadhi, are the content of practices for Bodhisattvas. And then the last one is the supreme utmost samadhi, is the one that Buddhas are doing. So the river point, or the key point of spiritual achievement, lies with Zen samadhi. It is not just a Zen practitioner who do meditation. All other schools, they too emphasize the importance of samadhi. It's just they have different terminologies. For Buddha name chanting students of the Pure Land School, their goal is single mind without scattering. That is samadhi. For teaching school who study all kinds of sutra, they talk about skillful application of stillness and observation. That is basically samadhi. For the Vajrayana Buddhism, they talk about the three proper correspondence of the three essence in body, speech, and mind. When that happens, it is also basically samadhi. In our daily life, we need to have a little bit of sort of similar to samadhi state too, in order to handle things properly. And what is that little something similar to samadhi? That is, in your heart and mind, you know what goal you want to achieve, and you will not be interfered or affected by surrounding environment or external factors. Therefore, the scientist who can have achievement in the scientific research area, and you can say they have scientific samadhi, because their mind has to be still in the direction of their research and must not be interfered by others and other things. In the example we mentioned earlier, a person, a monk who stood facing the window and passed away, that person has reached Buddha name chanting samadhi. So patience comes first, and then with patience, diligence become possible. With continuous diligent work in your spiritual path, then samadhi comes. And the word in Chinese is Zen Samadhi. Sit down and practice meditation is only one of the numerous Zen Samadhi methods. The sixth patriarch, Huimin, of Zen Buddhism, who became enlightened upon hearing a statement from the Diamond Sutra, and he gave an interpretation of Zen Samadhi. Zen means externally not attached to any phenomenon or concept. Samadhi means inwardly the mind is not moving. This actually is the similar statement from the Diamond Sutra. It says, not attached to any phenomena, and yet the mind is unmoving. So this is basically Zen Samadhi, because not to attach anything external, that's Zen. And not moving one's mind, it's Samadhi. In the Four Adorned Sutra, the main person, San Tai Tongzi, who visited one of the great teachers of his time, Yuxiang Zhangzi, who happened to practice Zen Samadhi. He practiced Zen Samadhi of the highest class in the market, equivalent to today's shopping mall. And he was doing this high-level Samadhi practice in the shopping mall, and the mind still not scattered or moving. So we oftentimes envy a person who can sit there for hours or days without moving. Actually, the highest level samadhi are those who can do things in daily life, even shopping, and still not lose their mind or the inner peace of the mind. The Diamond Sutra has very good explanation about the Zen samadhi. It basically says externally away from phenomena without attachment. Internally, the mind is not moving. And in the Diamond Sutra, it explains because all phenomena are basically like hallucination, unreal. And all activities and concepts are like dream, like a bubble, like shadow. They are not real. And it's not easy to explain unless we use the consciousness only teaching, which you may say roughly like Buddhism psychology to explain. Because all the world, all this phenomenal world, material, non-material, concepts, whatever, can be categorized into 100 types. The type associated with the mind, there are 8. An object of the mind, there are 51. And those not corresponding to the mind, such as time that you cannot control to make it stop, there are about 24 of those. And then material things, there are 11. So altogether, 8 plus 20, 51 plus 24 plus 11 makes 100. That covers the whole universe, inwardly, outwardly, everything. But this are basically hallucination and unreal. Only one person realizes that everything, when we say everything that's above 100 items, are unreal, then the mind will not move. And then the true mind will be able to come out or restored. And then with the true mind, one will have proper understanding and proper knowledge. It can be called Buddha's knowledge, Buddha's perception. And this is the Prajnaparamita stage. When the mind is completely clear and see everything perfectly clear, and yet without any attachment, and then one will be able to help all sentient beings unconditionally, because one has experienced that all beings are fundamentally in one and sharing the same Dhammakaya, same true Buddha nature. For example, if you feel itching to your arms and you scratch your hand, would you talk about, what if I do this for you, what would be my advantage, or what kind of thing, good thing you want to give me as reward? You don't discuss that. You just go ahead and scratch, because the right hand and left hand are not different. They are in one, a part of the body. No separation. But sentient beings has confused. They distinguish self from others. Therefore, they do things for the satisfaction of the self, and then create all kinds of mistakes or sins, and therefore suffer from the wrongdoings due to the misconcept about self, egoistic self. And then the suffering is tremendous. If a person knows how to shoot one and others are fundamentally one, therefore help others unconditionally, that is giving paramita. And one do things, follow the principle, follow the rules and regulation, that is precept observing paramita. And one do things with patience and perseverance, that is patience or endurance paramita. But one do things with single mind and not scattered, and continue this way, it is perseverance or diligent paramita. When one do things without scattering, that is Zen Samadhi paramita. When one do things with complete clarity, crystal clarity, that is Prajna paramita. So if one just receive Bodhisattva precepts and call oneself as Bodhisattva, that is not true. Only if one, in doing everything and still in agreement with the above mentioned 6 principles, then one is truly Bodhisattva. Otherwise, only receive the ceremony, that kind of Bodhisattva is like a clay Bodhisattva, has no real function. So far, for the past few nights, we have covered the 3 virtues, we have covered 6 harmonies, we have covered 3 procedures, 3 steps, which is the precept, samadhi, and wisdom. And we also covered six paramitas. All these are actual things need to be put into practice in daily life. If one can do those things, then one are truly practicing Buddha Dharma. However, only practice six paramita and did very well, the best, only to become a great Bodhisattva, still cannot become Buddha. With this foundation and practice, six paramita, and apply to Buddha name chanting, the highest level is reach single mind state called a Si Yi Xin Bu Luan. That is, no moving of the mind in the phenomenal world, so to speak. To go to a high level and practice universal goodness, Bodhisattva method of the 10 great vows of the king of ten great vows, that method, that practices to a perfect state, then will reach a single state of the mind in essence. Then one can become Buddha. So when we talk about the 10 great vows, that is only when one has finished the six paramita. Otherwise, one cannot even touch that, because that is very high level for the great Bodhisattva to achieve Buddha. That's the time they do it. Starting now, we're going to cover the 10 supreme vows of the universal goodness Bodhisattva Mahasattva's practice. And that practice, when finished, one becomes Buddha. What is the characteristic of the universal Bodhisattva's practices of these 10 great supreme vows? That is because it is as vast as the emptiness, so huge and vast in every single item. The first item of the 10 great vows is to respect all Buddha. And that does mean Buddha of what we understand. Buddha, in a broader sense, means all sentient beings with feeling and all things without feeling, such as a rock, a wood, or something. For the sentient beings with feeling, it can be further categorized as animal, human being, and even the plant. They do have feeling. That is the sentient being category. And therefore, sentient beings and non-sentient beings all together are the broad sense of Buddha. So to say, pay greatest respect to all Buddhas, meaning you will do everything perfect, with perfect respect. We think we are pretty devoted to the Buddha Dharma. That is not the case. We have distinguishing mind, discriminating mind. We haven't received any tests. If somebody says, let's go do some business, guarantee you'll make $1 million tonight, you probably will not come tonight to listen to the Dharma. So our devotion and dedication is not what the universal goodness Bodhisattva talk about. His type of respect is the supreme, to the supreme level, and covers everything without any left out. And you may wonder why all beings and non-beings are covered. In Chinese word, that there's one single word meaning all beings and non-beings. That basically or literally means everything forms by other conditions. That is considered as all beings and non-beings. So for that broad sense of definition of all beings and non-beings, then in practicing universal goodness Bodhisattva, in the first item would be, for a book, you will make the book nice and put in a proper order. For the table, you'll let it stay in a proper place and clean the table. Does not mean you will bow to the table, because that's part of the Buddha in a broader sense. No, you just put them in the proper order, nice and neat. That's for the objects. For all sentient beings, without exception, you treat them as future Buddha, as if you are facing a real Buddha. And for things that not subject, not object, but some kind of things you want to do, you still do that with great respect and complete attention. That is within the scope of respect to all Buddhas. That is the definition of respect all Buddhas. That covers everything without exception. The second item of the great supreme vows of the good universal goodness Bodhisattvas is praise Tathagata. Why here it mentioned Tathagata instead of Buddha? Because when talk about Buddhas, it's looking from the viewpoint of image. When talk about Tathagata, it's looking from a nature point of view, nature. Therefore, the first one, it talk about from all the image